So we're talking about Sodom and Gomorrah this morning. It's a story of personal choice. It's about Lot. It's how our sins draw us in and compromise our walk with the Lord. Lot was the nephew of Abram. When his father died, he went to live with Abram, spent many, many years with Abraham. And we know Abraham was a godly man, and that, you know, Lot was shown the way of the Lord. He knew the way of the Lord. And I'm guessing while he was with Abraham, he mimicked a walk with the Lord. I think he followed Abraham and certainly looked at his example. And so they were herdsmen. They raised cattle and sheep and so on and so forth, and they were very, very successful. And as both their herds grew, they figured out that the area in which they were farming was too small. It was too small for one of the herds, let alone both of the herds. Abraham turned to Lot and said, Lot, pick a spot, look out over the plain, you know, figure out where you would like to take your herd, and I will go someplace else. I'll give you first choice. And so so Lot looked out over the plain. He lifted his eyes and he saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you go towards Zoar. And his first mistake was, instead of looking up and talking to the Lord about this decision, he made it on his own. He did it by looking at how beautiful the landscape was, rather than how spiritual it was. This is Las Vegas on steroids, you know. So before I came to the Lord, I'd been to Las Vegas just a couple of times. And I thought I was pretty tame, but it is certainly a city that draws you in and has abundant sin available. And that's who goes there. It's people who are looking for an opportunity to check out of normal life for a few days and to get a little bit crazy. And we certainly witnessed a lot of that. So Lot goes on. It says Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and even pitched his tent as far as Sodom. That is Genesis 13:12. And by the time we get to Genesis 14:12, we learn that Lot is living in Sodom. There is a war, and Sodom is overtaken, and the residents are kidnapped and taken away. And it tells us that Lot was one of those who was kidnapped. Abraham actually makes an army of his own servants, about 350 people, takes them to free Lot and the other prisoners. And at that point in time, Lot decides to dwell in Sodom again. So that takes us to, if you will, just give me just a second. We will be in Genesis 18. I'll just read it for a moment. The angels of the Lord and the Lord himself have visited with Abraham. They show up. This is where the Lord promises Abraham he will have a son. His wife will bear a son within a year. His wife overhears that. She's in the kitchen preparing a meal, and she overhears it, and she chuckles. And the Lord kind of calls her out on it, saying, you will have a child. What I say will happen. You need not worry about that. And the next day, it says regarding these men, then the men rose there and looked towards Sodom, and Abraham went with them to send them on their way. The Lord said, I shall shall I hide from Abraham what I am doing? Since Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. For I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they that they keep the way of the Lord and to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him. And the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grave, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether accordingly, according to the outcry against it that has come to me. And if not, I will know. Then the men turned away from there and went towards Sodom, but Abraham stood still before the Lord. And Abraham came near and said, would you also destroy the righteous with the wicked? Supposed there were 50 righteous within the city, would you also destroy the place and not spare it for the 50 righteous that were in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing as this, to slay the righteous with the wicked, so that the righteous should be as the wicked. Far be it from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth do right? Quite a conversation. Quite call out the Lord on that. And the Lord said, if I find in Sodom 50 righteous within the city, then I will spare all the place for their sakes. Then Abraham answered and said, indeed now, I who am but dust and ashes have taken it upon myself to speak to the Lord. Suppose there were 5 less than the 50 righteous. Would you destroy all of the city for lack of 5? So he said, if I find there are 45, I will not destroy it. And he spoke to him yet again and said, suppose there should be 40 found. So he said, I will not do it for the I will not do it if I find 30 there. And he said, indeed now, I have taken it upon myself to speak to the Lord. Suppose 20 should be found there. So he said, I will not destroy it for the sake of 20. And then he said, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak. But once more, should 10 be found there? And the Lord said, I will not destroy it for the sake of 10. So the Lord went his way as soon as he finished speaking with Abraham, and Abraham returned to his place. That brings us to our text this morning, Genesis 19. Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting at the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face towards the ground. And he said, hear now, my lords, please turn in to your servant's house and spend the night, and wash your feet. Then you may rise early and go on your way. And they said, no, but we will spend the night in the open square. But he insisted strongly. So they turned to him and entered his house. Then he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. So they find Lot at the gate of the city. The gate is the entrance, just an opening where everybody must pass to and from. And those who stay at the gate, who guard the gate, are the leadership of the city. They are the spiritual and the political leaders. And Lot has obviously, from his time on the plain, where he was a herdsman, he has grown. He has grown in stature. And he is now at least one of the people in the city who has authority over the people of the city. And I believe Lot recognizes these are men of the Lord. He bows to them. He addresses them as my lords, and he offers them sanctuary in his house, as it will It will get them out of the center of the city where Lot knows they will see things. He doesn't know they're there to judge the city, but he certainly knows that knowing that he's a spiritual leader, that what goes on in the city will certainly reflect on him. And I believe his hope is that he will he'll get them into his house, they'll bathe, they'll eat, and early in the morning they'll be on their way, and judgment of him, of his spiritual walk, will not take place. They resist. They say they are going to just stay in the center of the city. They'll stay amongst the people. After all, they're there to judge. They're there to witness. But his insistence, they follow him to his house, and that's where they stay. Starts to get a little more spicy now, in that now before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both old and young, all the people from every quarter surround the house. And they call to Lot and said to him, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out so that we may know them carnally." This is a rather large city, and it's not a small group of men. It is all the men, young and old, the entire city has come to this sexual sin, which has been named after the city, sodomy. They wish to have sex with these men. It's hard to imagine that. And you wonder how they got to that place. And there's a little bit of an explanation when we get to Ezekiel 49. It says, "Look, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. She and her daughter had pride, fullness of food, and abundance of idleness. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy." So what we find is that Sodom is full of wealthy people with a lot of time on their hands, and idle time and wealth, not towards the Lord, certainly take us to a spot that tempt us to involve ourselves in wicked things. So it appears that that this group of men have come to their sin because they just have no other things to do. So Lot, in verse 6 rather, went out through the door and shut the door behind him. And, so this kind of leads to the fact that they followed him a little bit. He's spoken to them in the past, and they're showing him some respect. They haven't jumped him yet. And he says, "See now, I have two daughters who have not known a man. Please let them bring out to you, and you may do to them as you wish. Only do nothing to these men, since this is the reason they have come under the shadow of my roof." Bad idea, right? It's difficult to understand how a man would offer up his children, his daughters, in the place of two strangers. But it's certainly a bad decision. It's certainly something that would not be looked upon as very... Yeah, it's just wrong, and I don't know where else to go with that. And just to consider what's going on today, particularly in the state of Maine, actually, a little bit, certainly in America, but also in the state of Maine, God was taken out of the schools in the 1960s. And here in the state of Maine, the last 16 years, in 2009, state of Maine put on the ballot to legalize gay marriage. It lost by a margin of 53% against to 47% for. 3 years later, it appeared back on the ballot and had an exact flip from that. 53% for gay marriage, 47% against. In that 3 years, in addition to a major marketing campaign by those who were in favor, the major church, the biggest church in the world, went from opposing gay marriage to being neutral on gay marriage. They opposed, but they did not speak out. They did not lead their membership to vote against gay marriage. It was a flip. We needed a flip of just 12,000 votes to have the law not pass, and certainly this church that I'm talking about had many thousand more than 12,000 who would have voted following the church's leadership. In 2023, LD 1619 was a legislative vote. It wasn't a popular vote. Abortion by choice up to 26 weeks after the child is conceived. And beyond that, if a doctor deems it necessary. During the legislative hearings, for every person who spoke in favor of this bill, 30 spoke against it. And yet, our legislature voted to uphold the bill. And most recently, just this year, the transgender legislation, which is a popular, when you do a popular, ask the people, 80% of the people are opposed to public funds going to transgender operations, boys being in girls' sports, boys being in girls' locker rooms. 4 to 1 are opposed to that. And yet our legislature continues to support this transgender legislation. In Washington right now, there may be a temporary pause, but we are headed in the wrong direction. It will come back. The pendulum always swings. And we as a church need to be prepared to oppose that. I do ask one thing. What can we do? We can do two things. Actually, we can pray, right? Always pray. And secondly, just remember this, LD 1619, okay? Just keep that in mind. As soon as the snow goes away next spring, 2026 is a year in which there will be voting, people will be running for office. Somebody always walks down my driveway on those years, and they start to tell me how wonderful they are and how I should vote for them. Simply ask them how they voted for LD 1619. And if they say they voted in favor, you should tell them, please tell them, they do not have your support, they will never have your support, that there is a consequence for their actions. And they said, stand back. Then they said, this one came in to stay here, and he keeps acting as a judge, and we will deal worse with you than with them. So they pressed hard against the man, Lot, and they came near to break down the door. So stand back. They are driven by their insatiable desire to fulfill their sinful needs. They reject Lot's attempt to reason with them. This fellow came here a stranger. They belittle him, reminding him that he chose to come to this city knowing that it was sinful and that the nature of the city. And now he wants to play judge. They resent Lot's attempt of moral stance. And so sinners of a feather stick together. My son-in-law runs Arise Addiction Recovery. I can remember early on we were doing our addiction meeting here, probably 2018. A young man was he was addicted to pornography. And Paul, although he wasn't really set at that point in time, set up to minister to that, he quickly figured it out, took the young man in. And this young man went down and spent a year in discipleship with 12 men who were addicted to heroin, or had hard drugs anyway. And he never fit in. Those guys, they looked at him and his struggles just weren't their struggles, and he really struggled to stay there, because we tend to hang out to be with those people who act like us. Before I came to the Lord, I drank a fair amount. And I like to hang out with people who drank, it made me feel a lot more comfortable being in that environment. I didn't feel like an outcast. So now they're looking at Lot and they're figuring out that he's not one of them. And now they're threatening to sodomize him along with the two strangers. But the men reached out their hands and pulled Lot into the house with them and shut the door. So he's been pulled back in, and he is he's temporarily at least saved. And then they struck the men who were in the doorway of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they became weary trying to find the door. So they are struck spiritually and physically blind. And yet, they are so intent on fulfilling their sexual desire. They don't deal with their blindness. They are simply looking for a way to open the door. Experienced this a little bit. Our daughter, I think most spent 3 years addicted to opioids. It was an everyday need for her. She could not go without opioids. Several times a day. She lived with us for a year and a half, and there were but a few times that we saw she had no drugs, she had no money, she had no transportation, she had nothing. And there she sat, and the pain that she went through, and I don't mean, it was anguish. It wasn't just physical pain. It was anguish of how she could feed this addiction. It was incredible to watch. So kind of seeing that and understand it a little bit. And these men are at that point right now. They are clamoring for the door. Then the men said to Lot, "Have you anyone else here? Son-in-laws, your sons, your daughters, and whomever you have in the city, take them out of this place. For we will destroy this place, because the outcry against them has grown great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it." So now Lot knows why the men of God are there. He didn't have a clue until that point in time. Although I believe it was always his intent to hide from them the sexual sins of that city. And it also says, "And the Lord has sent us to destroy it." So it's not arbitrary. It is definitely of the Lord. These aren't men who have made the decision. It is something the Lord has sent them. So they're in there to do the Lord's work. So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law, who had married his daughters, and said, get up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But to his son-in-laws, he seemed to be joking. Lot's walk had not been one which had shown his sons, son-in-laws, that he was a man of God, that what he was speaking came from a place that they could believe. They certainly didn't believe that the Lord had spoken to him, or the Lord had sent anybody to save him, or that perhaps even there was a Lord. Lot had not lived in such a manner, regardless of what his upbringing was, of what he learned from Abraham over the years. He hadn't done anything to show these men that he was real. And so they simply looked at him as if he was joking. When the morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, "Arise, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city." And while he lingered, the men took a hold of his hand, his wife's hand, and the hands of his two daughters, and the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside the city. He lingered. He was not ready to leave. There was stuff there he really wanted to hold on to. And yet, the Lord being merciful, took him and his wife and his two daughters that were there with him. We don't know if he had sons. We don't know if he had other daughters. He had sons-in-laws. We assume that there were daughters with him. They saved the immediate family that was available, that was right there. So it came to pass, when they had brought them outside, that he said, "Escape for your life. Do not look behind, nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest you be destroyed." So the Lord has provided a way of escape. He always does. We just simply need to listen and to follow. Then Lot said to them, "Please know, my lords, indeed now, your servant has found favor in your sight, and you may have increased your mercy, which you have shown me by saving my life, but I cannot escape to the mountains, lest some evil overtake me and I die." The Lord has just pulled him away from a mob and pulled him out of an impending fire, and yet Lot thinks the Lord's going to put him amongst wolves that will devour him. Follow the Lord. When he shows you the way, go where he says. See, now this city is near enough to flee to, and it is a little one. Please let me escape there. It is not a little one. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live. Lot is willing to trade his big sin for little sin. He wants to hold on to something. He sees the city, not the wilderness. And in his own mind, he believes he can handle little sin. Problem is that little sin becomes big sin. Hurry. Escape there, for I cannot do anything until you arrive there. Therefore, the name of the city was called Zoar. So the angels agree, and they let him go to the city of little sin. The sun had risen upon the earth when Lot entered Zoar. The Lord then rained brimstone and fire on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. So he overthrew those cities, all the plain, all the inhabitants of the cities, and what grew on the ground. I've never been to the Dead Sea. This is the area in which Sodom and Gomorrah and Zoar are in. And I'm told that nothing grows there, that Nothing has grown there since this day, that it's a very desolate land. I am also told that this little space that Lot went to, Zoar, is believed to be Wa'r al-Safi, and there is life there. So the Lord protected that area and has not destroyed it, even to this day. But his wife looked back behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. So she continued to linger, she continued to want, she continued to crave her sin, and she looked back, even though she knew she shouldn't. And she passed. And Abraham went early in the morning to the place where he had stood before the Lord. We remember that we just read that Abraham stood before the Lord and he interceded on behalf of Lot and his family, and actually the whole city of Sodom and Gomorrah. And he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the plain, and he saw, and behold, the smoke of the land, which went up like smoke of a furnace. And it came to pass, when God destroyed the cities of the plain, that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overflow. He overthrew the cities in which Lot had dwelt. Again, Abraham asked, if there are 10 in the city who were righteous, would you spare the city? He did not ask, would you spare my nephew Lot and his family? So he'd asked for 10. Four got out, one looked back, we're down to 3, and the Lord spared them. He remembered Abram. He remembered that Abraham was a good man and had family, and he took care of those who were righteous. Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountains, and his two daughters were with him, for he was afraid to dwell in Zoar, and he and his two daughters dwelt in the cave. Apparently, he figured out after he got to Zoar that little sin was not going to work, and he headed for the mountains, and he ended up in a cave. I think that if he had followed the Lord's original instructions, he would probably have lived in a better dwelling place. It would have been more beautiful. It would have been less desolate. It would have been less sad. We're going to find out here in just a minute that they didn't do all that great. Now the firstborn said to the younger, our father is old, and there is no man on earth to come into us as is the custom of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, that we may preserve the lineage of our father. So they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father, and he did not know when she lay down, nor when she arose. It happened the next day that the firstborn said to the younger, indeed, I lay with my father last night. Let us make him drink wine tonight also, and you go in and lie with him, and that we may preserve the lineage of our father. Then they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. And both of the daughters of Lot were with child by their father. The firstborn bore a son and called him Moab. He is the father of the Moabites to this day. And the younger, she also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi. And he is the father of the people of Ammon to this day. And we know that neither the Moabites nor the Ammonites were extremely great people. They weren't of the Lord. And that all came from back when they were in the cave, and the firstborn said to the younger, our father is old, and there is no man on earth to come to us. This is the custom of all the earth, that they once again came to their own understanding instead of seeking the Lord's guidance, instead of praying you know, I read this, they'd come out of Zoar, they knew Zoar had been saved, at least at that point in time. They were probably overreacting and could have done, certainly could have and should have done things much different. But so I just want to spend just a couple minutes. I want to kind of put a modern day twist on this. Something very near and dear to me is addiction ministry. Both my daughter and my son-in-law came out of addiction. My son-in-law was a heroin addict for 17 years. Both have certainly felt the grace of God. You know, he plucked them out of the fire. So just for a second, picture this city of Sodom with all these sinful people just mired and gnawing at that door, wanting to get in. And an angel of the Lord, perhaps you, an angel of the Lord reaches and pulls them outside and says to them, walk forward, go for the mountains. Do not look back, for surely you will die. They begin the journey, and some don't walk very long, and they look back, and they die. They die spiritually, they die physically. We've certainly known many who have done both. Very sad. Of the others, 50% of them head to Zoar, place of little sin. Oh, they give up heroin addiction, they give up crack cocaine. It might take a while, they're in and out of it, but they live a better life. They live in a place where apparently the Lord, you know, will let them live. And the other 50% head to the mountains and live amongst the Lord for the remainder of their days. There are two discipleship programs that we're involved with, Calvary Residential Discipleship and Arise Addiction Recovery, that is absolutely the truth. 50% of the people who enter these programs are drug, alcohol, and tobacco free after 5 years. I find that to be incredible. What grace. People who go through secular programs are fed just legal heroin. They're fed methadone, they're fed Suboxone, they're fed drugs to maintain their levelness. And less than 5% ever get off from all drugs. It's an epidemic, and it's certainly something that we need to pray about, and we need to deal with. We need to lead people in this direction. Next Saturday, from 9 to noon, is called the Cure Conference. It is on Friday night. It's a celebration. Hundreds of graduates from these programs show up, and they just they gather and they share stories and testimonies and just the love of God. And then on Saturday, which is when we're invited, it's just an opportunity for an update. Usually there's a testimony or two. Maybe some vision for the future, where they're headed, what they're going to do a little different. But just want you to know that everybody's invited. And if you have the time, I'd encourage you to be there. It's really uplifting. It's one of my favorite days of the year. It gives us the hope. Gives us encouragement to continue in the battle.